Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland ISD seeks assessment of facilities. From staff reports. District releases request for qualifications for master plan consultant. Midland ISD has initiated steps to begin a comprehensive assessment of the district's buildings. The district released on Wednesday a request for qualifications for educational planning consultants experienced in providing a facility master plan, according to a press release. The master plan would give a comprehensive picture of the state of the facilities. This process will include information about the physical age and condition of the building structures, their mechanical and electrical components, furnishings and fixtures, as well as their capacity and relation to current K-12 educational facility best practices, says James Riggin, Chief Operations Officer, in a statement. The study would assess Midland ISD's 27 elementary schools, 4 junior highs, 2 freshman schools, 2 comprehensive high schools, schools of choice, and alternative schools, as well as other district facilities such as warehouses, maintenance facilities, child nutritional services, athletic complexes, transportation sites, technology offices, and central administration building. A master plan is a well-established method of identifying current and future educational and instructional needs, assessing existing facilities, prioritizing building improvements, and planning for new or renovated buildings, Superintendent Orlando Reddick said. In gathering feedback following the 2019 bond, one of the things we heard was a desire for greater information about the state of the district's facilities and how those facilities rate to our academic goals, said Rick Davis, president of the board. This facility study is one way we are seeking to address those in the community who voiced this opinion. This assessment will also provide a proposed maintenance and renewal schedule, demographic study, and facilitation of ongoing community input. As part of the RFQ, the consultant is asked to facilitate a community steering committee made up of about 100 people. The district said previously that there would not be another bond proposal before November 2021, and only after a lengthy community engagement process, according to the release. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. De Zavala teacher finds her calling at MC. When Myra Garcia was a student in Midland College's Associate of Applied Teaching program in 2016, she did her field observation course at a second grade class at what was then Crockett Elementary School. It was an eye-opening experience, Garcia said. The majority of students at Crockett were classified as economically disadvantaged. Some of them lived with grandmothers because both parents were in jail, or they lived with a single mom who was struggling to make ends meet and put food on the table. The children came to school in such a good mood, wanting to learn, despite the fact that many of them were hungry. That's when I knew that my job is to open doors for them, and teaching is my calling. Garcia was a student teacher in fall 2019 and specifically asked to be assigned to a school where the majority of students are economically disadvantaged. They started her career as a teacher at De Zavala Elementary. Garcia was born in Houston, where she spent her early school years. When she was in the seventh grade, her family moved to Midland. She graduated from Midland High School in 2011 and enrolled at Midland College that fall. She graduated with an associate degree in 2013. I just took general studies courses, and then I went to work for the Canadian-based oil and gas company, Canelson Drilling. I worked in the human resources department. When the company was purchased by Trinidad Drilling, I was laid off. My boyfriend said, "You need to get out of the oil and gas industry and do something else." I'd always thought that I would go back to a four-year university and pursue an education degree. I discovered that I could start with education courses at Midland College through the Associate of Applied Teaching program. So I met with Denise McCowan, Midland College Dean of Education. She is truly an inspiration and is passionate about teaching. Upon meeting her, I decided that I wanted to end up like her. Garcia began the AAT program in 2016. She said that because of some bad grades the first time she was at Midland College, she had to retake some courses. I called it repairing my GPA. Garcia managed to not only raise her GPA, but also excel in her education courses. She transferred to the University of Texas Permian Basin in the summer of 2018 to finish her education degree. She graduated in December. I wouldn't recommend that students do what I did and be in the position of having a low GPA. However, if my grades hadn't been that low, I don't think I would have worked as hard as I did. I probably wouldn't have made the dean's list and president's list at MC. I wouldn't have made dean's list my first semester at UTPB, and without a doubt, I wouldn't have met the great teachers I met along the way who continue to inspire, push, and mentor me. Garcia was offered a job at De Savala while she was doing her student teaching with lead teacher Christy Walker. Christy is a great role model, and the principal, Julie Sims, and assistant principal, Monica Hernandez, are very supportive. I was thrilled when they offered me a position teaching sixth grade science and social studies. Garcia admits that her first semester as a teacher was a bit stressful, mainly because of having to teach online for 9 weeks during the coronavirus pandemic. Fortunately, I had a great team of sixth grade teachers at De Savala. The students were already accustomed to working on Google Chromebooks, so they were familiar with interactive online learning. We had to loan some of the Chromebooks to students who didn't have access to a computer at home. I would upload videos for the students to watch on their own. The students had online interactive notebooks, and assignments were done through Google Docs. Every Friday, I held live video sessions in order to touch base with the students and see if they had questions. The hardest part was getting the students to engage. Garcia is looking forward to returning to the classroom for the next academic year. She will be teaching fourth grade reading. In her spare time, Garcia enjoys crafting and watching football with her boyfriend, Jose Bosquez, a graduate of MC's Diesel Technology Program. Garcia said she is a Texans fan and Bosquez is a Cowboys fan. They try to travel to games when the two teams play each other. I'm so glad that I met Denise McCowan and made the decision to become a teacher. My ultimate goal is to get a master's degree in education in a few years. Education can open a lot of doors. I want to help make children's lives better. Midland College program embraces 21st century technology by Travis Woodward. Artists are renowned for their creativity and innovation. Throughout history, they have adapted to changes in technology that have resulted in amazing artistic creations. The Midland College Art Program is embracing 21st century digital technologies with the purchase of several new pieces of equipment designed to streamline and enhance students' educational experience. This new equipment includes two high-fire kilns, a 3D potter, a micro 3D printer, and a CryCut cutting machine, which will provide students with a new way to visualize the creative process and allow for a higher level of detail. Also, the art program has added a new Glowforge laser cutter etcher. The Glowforge can cut and edge a wide range of materials and has many real applications for design and fabrication. The Hanley Charitable Trust provided funds to purchase this equipment, which is part of a new MC Art Technology initiative. The trust will also provide funding for a new filament-based 3D printer and a 3D scanner. The goal is to allow experimentation with technology, material, and artistic potential, says Michael Richardson, MC Associate Professor of Art. He sees this new equipment as a means to help students develop new skills and discover additional ways to create 3D art. Merging a handmade art object with a virtually designed and printed art object. The addition of this new technology puts us at the cutting edge on what's going on right now with virtual design and 3D printing. For ceramics, we can use that specific medium to design, create, and fire new student creations. This fall, Midland College will expand its academic programs by offering a hybrid course format in art, which will combine on-campus and online coursework. The new equipment will enable students to create or design using the software at home or in the computer lab, and then to render their projects on site. This equipment will allow students to print things that would be impossible or very difficult to throw on the potter's wheel or even to hand build, said J.C. Barrett, student and part-time employee. People can design something on their computer, print it, and then incorporate it into their work. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, July 3rd, 2020. Obituaries and death notices. Martin Ray Straub, Marty, fourth generation Stanton, Texas resident, passed away suddenly and peacefully at his home in Stanton on June the 30th. He leaves behind his loving wife, Kayla Jo, his two sons, his mother and father, his brother Raymond, several nephews and nieces. A visitation will be held Thursday, July 2nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Gilbreth Funeral Home. A second visitation will be held on Friday, July 3rd, at 10 a.m. at Giles McCoy Funeral Home in Aspermont. A graveside service will be held on Friday, July 3rd, at 2 p.m. at Aspermont Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Online condolences can be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Aaron Joseph Roper, 39 of Midland, died Wednesday, July 1st. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. July 6th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Charles Earl Waits, 75, passed away June 30th. Funeral services will be held in San Jose, California at a later date. Survivors include his daughters, a son. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Curtis L. Gust, 89 of Midland, passed away June 30th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, July 6th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Jose Joe Ramirez, 55 of Midland, passed away June 29th. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 7th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of the Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com.
Midland Reporter Telegram Obituaries, Sunday, July 5th. Aaron Joseph Roper. Aaron Joseph Roper, 39 of Midland, passed away July 1st. Services will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, July 6th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Bob Bratcher of Mission Dorado Baptist Church officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Aaron married Corey Roper on May 28, 2011. Aaron is preceded in death by his parents, Harvey and Bonnie Wester, Johnny and Lara Roper, and Uncle Gene Wester. Aaron is survived by his wife, Corey Roper, daughter Zoe Roper, parents Eddie and Patsy Roper, sister Amber Roper, stepson Dylan Thompson, his four-legged running buddies Rowdy and Driller, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. The family wishes to thank family and friends for their prayers and support during this time. Charles Earl Waits. Charles Earl Waits, age 75, passed away June 30th at his residence in Midland. Born November 7th, 1945, in Marlin, Texas, to the late Sam Waits and Maurice Sutters. Charles is survived by his son, Charles Gowans, his daughters Amelia Rose, Chiquita Waits, Forevermind Trotter, Alexis Anderson, stepson Marcus Strambler, and stepdaughter Courtney Enosos, great-grandchildren Michaela, Marcus Jr., Sequoia, Precious, Mihanjani, Jaslyn, Douglas, Chad Jr., Charles Cameron, Desiree, Cambry, Elena, Blessin, Juaniton, Eternity, Sincere, Aiden, Najee, and great-granddaughter Keely and Arnez. He is preceded by his wife, Ederina Waits, and daughter, Shirley Waits. Funeral services will be held in San Jose, California, at a later date. Funeral arrangements entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Herman W. Jones. Herman W. Jones of Midland, Texas, passed away July 2nd in Big Spring, just 6 days shy of his 98th birthday. Herman is survived by his son, Daniel Jones of Midland, and his daughter, Deanne Jones, San Burgo, of Portland, Oregon. Herman is predeceased in death by his wife, Valera Jones, his mother and father, Richard and Leela Jones, and his siblings, Richard Jones Jr., Edward Jones, and Cletha Clayton. Herman was born July 8, 1922, in Caddo, Texas. The family would like to express their gratitude to all of Herman's friends, both First Baptist Church and Midland Gem and Mineral Society, and family members who supported him and loved him along the way. The family deeply appreciates the staff and nurses at Lamon Lusk Sanchez Texas State Veterans Home in Big Spring. They cared for Herman during his last few years and made a home for him at their facility and treated him like a member of the family. In lieu of flowers, Herman would be honored if memorials and donations could be made to Midland Gem and Mineral Society, P.O. Box 5043, Midland, Texas 79704, to support their ongoing education programs. A visitation will be held Wednesday, July 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. A small private graveside service will be held, and the family hopes to have a celebration of life service when it is safe to do so. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be left at npwelch.com. Jose Luis Ramirez, Joe. Jose Luis Ramirez, Joe, entered the gates of heaven on June 29th. He was born November 16th, 1964, in Pecos, Texas, to Juan and Janara Ramirez. He is survived by his wife, Olvido Ramirez, his siblings, Mary Montoya, Margarita Ramirez, Rosa Ramirez, and Juan Ramirez, his children Naomi and David Lavario, Jose and Dana Ramirez, Vanessa and Trey Villanueva, Clarissa and Noel Sotelo, Jonathan and Emily Tovar, Peter Tovar, Lori Gonzalez, and Michael Ramirez, his 11 grandchildren, aunts, uncles, and many other relatives and friends that loved him so much. Jose was preceded in death by his mother, Janara, father, Juan, and grandson, Azrael. The family wants to express our deepest gratitude for all who have helped in so many ways. A viewing will be held from 1 to 9 p.m. Sunday, July 5th, and from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday, July 6th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. A funeral service will take place 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 7th, at Stonegate Fellowship in Midland. A burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. The family is requesting that if you have Dallas Cowboys gear, to please wear it to the funeral. Masks were required for all 3 days. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Richard Adam Wiederstein. Richard Adam Wiederstein, 63 of Midland, passed away on April 3rd. A memorial mass will be held on July 11th at 1 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. On any given afternoon, you could find him in his chair napping, surrounded by his fur babies, Herbie, Rooney, Petey, and Charlie Cat. Rick is survived by his loving wife, Kathy, Aaron, and his wife, Dottie, and Alex of Midland, brother Alan and his wife, Jeanette of Edmond, Oklahoma, brother Tim of San Antonio, and sister Debbie and husband Mike Jenkins of Edmond, Oklahoma. Sisters-in-law, Mary Jack and Stanley Rao of O'Keen, Oklahoma. Paula Schwartz, Patty Schwartz and Frank, Angel and Eric Lubach, Henry and Brad Blem, Tracy and Ricky McPherson. Rick also had many nieces and nephews, cousins and aunts and uncles who loved him dearly. Rick is preceded in death by mother and father, Vivian and Alan. His mother and father-in-law, Shirley and Jack Schwartz. Nieces and nephews, as well as aunts and uncles. Love and thanks to Joan and Chris Huff and Sherry and Mike Ehringer for all their love and support through this adventure. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Texas Size Garage Sale, P.O. Box 80519, Midland, Texas, 79708. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Crystal Villarreal. Crystal Villarreal, 32, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, July 1st. Crystal Renee Villarreal was born February 25th, 1988, in Amarillo. Survived by her husband, Angel Villarreal, daughters Hope Autumn Villarreal and Grace Ann Villarreal, mother Renee Aldrin and stepdad David Aldrin, father John Taylor, brother Christopher Taylor, grandmother Ruby Hannum, grandfather Bernard Hannum, along with many aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews, as well as fur babies Stanley, Nina, and Wally, preceded in death by great-grandmother Ada Lunsford, great-grandfather J.B. Lunsford, grandmother Nellie Miller, and grandfather Doc Miller. Viewing will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Tuesday, July 7th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Celebration of Life ceremony will be held at Hope Alive Church of Odessa Wednesday, July 8th at 10 a.m. Graveside service will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden in Midland, Texas. Death Notice. Clara McGrath. Clara McGrath, 99, of Midland, passed away Friday, June 26th in Midland. Clara was born July 28, 1920, to Mary and Lafette Hart in Missouri. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, July 3rd. 2020. Obituaries and death notices for Friday, July 3rd. Joel Velasquez. Joel Velasquez, 67, died surrounded by his family Monday, June 29th in Weatherford. He was born in Visalia, California, April 26, 1953, to Guadalupe Bullard and Gilbert Velasquez. He is survived by his wife, Irene, of Weatherford, daughters Jennifer Howe and husband Chad of Irving, Kimberly Velasquez of Weatherford, son Jacob Velasquez and wife Maggie of Keller, 4 grandchildren, brothers Gilbert Velasquez of Pasadena, Ruben Velasquez of Odessa, sister Olivia Carmona of Odessa, brothers Israel Velasquez of Tilden, David Bullard of Odessa, Hector Bullard of Odessa, and Gilbert Velasquez of Austin. He is preceded in death by his grandfather, Raymond Anzaldua, father, Gilbert Velasquez of Mission, mother, Guadalupe Bullard, stepfather, James Bullard of Odessa, brothers, Ronnie Velasquez, Herman Velasquez, and Elias Velasquez. Visitation was held Friday, July 3rd in the Galbraith Pickard Funeral Chapel, and a service for his funeral was held July 3rd. Brad Harvey Linneman. Brad Harvey Linneman, 50, husband, brother, and uncle, passed away Saturday, June 27th in Carlsbad, New Mexico. He was born and raised in Odessa. Brad is preceded in death by his parents, Louis and Louise. He is survived by his wife, Misty, siblings, Carol and Stephen, nephew, Ryan, nieces, Sarah and Elizabeth, a great-nephew and a great-niece. Services were held Friday, July 3rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Please visit the online guest book to share memories of Brad and condolences for the family at www.sunsetodessa.com. In lieu of flowers, the family has requested memorial contributions to the Salvation Army. Death notices. Irby Sáenz Hernández. Irby Sáenz Hernández, 57, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June 30th in Fort Worth. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, July 6th at Acres West 24-Hour Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. James Lewis Jimmy Lee. James Lewis Jimmy Lee, 78, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 1st in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Aaron Joseph Roper. Aaron Joseph Roper, 39, of Midland, died Wednesday, July 1st. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. July 6th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Pastor Bob Bratcher officiating. Obituaries for Sunday, July 5th. Carrie Jean Cox. Carrie Jean Cox of Odessa passed away May 24th at the age of 72. He is preceded in death by his father, Roy Cox, and mother, Myrtle Cheney Cox. Carrie is survived by his wife, Magdalena. They were married in Odessa in 1987. He is survived by his daughter, Sherry Baeza, son, Ashley Cox, son, Paul Almanza, and wife, Shirley, and son, Pete Almanza III, and wife, Jan. He is also survived by 13 grandchildren, his brothers, Johnny Cox and wife, Lenny, and Carol Cox and wife, Mickey, Vicky, and his sister Lita Scott and husband Tom, as well as many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Carrie was born in Brownwood, October 6th, 1947. A special celebration of life will be held July 10th at 2 p.m. at the First United Pentecostal Church in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in memory of Carrie G. Cox to the Disabled American Veterans, DAV. Jerry Lynn Gresham. Jerry Lynn Gresham, 79, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, June 30th. He was born in Haskell to Walter and Trudy Gresham, September 7th, 1940. He married Jackie Hammer Phillips in 1965. Jerry is survived by his wife Jackie, his son Ronnie, three daughters, Carol Butler, Kim Drybread, and Wendy Harris, eight grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. There will be no funeral services, but to send condolences to the family, please visit his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Aaron Joseph Roper. Aaron Joseph Roper, 39, of Midland, passed away July 1st. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, July 6th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Bob Bratcher of Mission Dorado Baptist Church officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Aaron was born in Odessa to Eddie and Patsy Roper, March 24th, 1981. He married Corey Roper in 2011 in Midland. Aaron is preceded in death by his grandparents, Harvey and Bonnie Wester, and Johnny and Lara Roper, and an uncle, Gene Wester. He is survived by his wife, Corey, daughter Zoe Roper, parents Eddie and Patsy Roper, sister Amber Roper, stepson Dylan Thompson, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. Death notices. Yanelli Bernal. Yanelli Bernal, 14, died Thursday, July 2nd in Dallas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Gerald Wayne Ellison. Gerald Wayne Ellison, 71, of Pidcoke, died Tuesday, June 23rd. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Hewitt Arney Funeral Home of Temple. Betty Jo Kerr. Betty Jo Kerr, 92, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 1st. A funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m., Tuesday, July 7th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Pastor Mike Bartlett officiating. Ezekiel Mata. Ezekiel Mata, infant, of Odessa, died Monday, June 29th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Virgil Ray Pate. Virgil Ray Pate, 85, died Saturday, July 4th. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled Trump Faces Reckoning, Repudiation Over Racism by Dana Milbank, Washington Post Writers Group. 4 years ago, Christopher Parker, an African-American political scientist at the University of Washington, made the provocative argument that Donald Trump's candidacy could, quote, do more to advance racial understanding than the election of Barack Obama, unquote. Trump's clear bigotry, Parker wrote in the American Prospect, a liberal journal, makes it impossible for whites to deny the existence of racism in America. His success clashes with many white Americans' vision of the United States as a fair and just place. Those words seem prescient today, after 4 years of President Trump racism, from the very fine people marching with neo-Nazis in Charlottesville, to, in just the past week, a white power retreat and the threat to veto defense spending to protect the names of Confederate generals. After a pandemic disproportionately ravaged African-American communities while an indifferent Trump tried to move on, after Trump-allied demonstrators, some carrying firearms and Confederate flags, tried to liberate themselves from public health restrictions, after the video of George Floyd's killing showed the world blatant police brutality, after Trump used federal firepower against peaceful civil rights demonstrators of all colors. The reckoning Parker foresaw is now upon us. White women, disgusted by Trump's cruelty, are abandoning him in large numbers. White liberals, stunned by the brazen racism, have taken to the streets, and signs point to African-American turnout in November that will rival the record level of 2012 when Obama was on the ballot. This by itself would flip Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin to Democrats. An analysis by the Liberal Center for American Progress shows. Surprisingly high Democrat turnout in recent contests in Wisconsin, Georgia, Kentucky, and Colorado points to the possibility of a building wave. The various measures of Democratic enthusiasm suggest turnout beyond anything we've seen since 1960, said University of North Carolina political scientist Mark Hetherington. If so, that would mean a historic repudiation of Trump, who knows his hope of re-election depends on low turnout. He has warned that mail-in ballots and other attempts to encourage more voting would mean, quote, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again, unquote. That may not be wrong. Trump has accelerated a decades-old trend toward parties redefining themselves by race and racial attitudes. Racial resentment is now the single most important factor driving Republicans and Republican-leaning movers, according to extensive research, most recently by Nicholas Valentino and Kirill Zurkoff at the University of Michigan. More than religion, culture, class, or ideology. An ongoing study by the University of North Carolina researchers finds that racial resentment even drives hostility toward mask wearing and social distancing. Conversely, racial liberalism now drives Democrats of all colors more than any other factor. Consider just one yardstick, a standard question of racial attitudes in which people are asked to agree or disagree with this statement. It's really a matter of some people not trying hard enough. If blacks would only try harder, they could be just as well off as whites. In 2012, 56% of white Republicans agreed with that statement, according to the American National Election Studies. The number grew in 2016 with Trump's rise to 59%. Last month, an astonishing 71% of white Republicans agreed, according to a YouGov poll written by Parker and conducted by GQR, where my wife is a partner. The opposite movement among white Democrats is even more striking. In 2012, 38% agreed that African Americans didn't try hard enough. In 2016, that dropped to 27% and now just 13%. To the extent Trump's racist provocation is a strategy rather than simply an instinct, it is a miscalculation. The electorate was more than 90% white when Richard Nixon deployed his Southern strategy. The proportion is now 70% white and shrinking. But more than that, Trump's racism has alienated a large number of white people. For many white Americans, the things Trump is saying and getting away with, They just didn't think they lived in a world where that could happen, says Vincent Hutchings, a political scientist specializing in public opinion at the University of Michigan. Racist appeals, in particular, alienate white, college-educated women, and even some women without college degrees, he has found. One of the best ways to exacerbate the gender gap isn't to talk about gender, but to talk about race. Trump's racism has also emboldened white Democrats, who have often been on the losing end of racial politics since George H.W. Bush deployed Willie Horton against Michael Dukakis in 1988. They're embracing the racial issues they used to cower on in decades past, Hetherington said. This is what Parker had in mind when he wrote in 2016 that Trump could be good for the United States. The backlash Trump provoked among whites and non-whites alike could kick off a second Reconstruction, Parker said. I know it sounds crazy, especially coming from a black man, he says, but I think Trump actually is one of the best things that's happened to this country. This is the column called Guest View. It is entitled George Floyd Murals Bring Deeper Meaning to Issues of Injustice, from the Dallas Morning News. In Minneapolis, hues of blue and yellow form the face of a George Floyd mural with a resolution to his last words scrawled against the purple of his sweatshirt, I can breathe now. Radiating from the halo cast by a sunflower standing prominently behind him are the names of those who passed before him, all too soon. Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, and the list goes on. The country erupted in outrage following the death of Floyd by police on Memorial Day in Minneapolis. Protests flooded the streets and chants ran clear through the night across states at the sheer horror of the death of the 46-year-old black man who died when a police officer pressed his knee against his neck for nearly 8 minutes, ignoring pleas for him to stop. But along with those protests, rallies, and marches, art has formed. Just as Floyd's yellow, blue, and purple mural appeared at the place of his death, so have thousands of others appeared across the country and the world. In Houston, his hometown, Floyd's image is accompanied by thick white angel wings. A halo floats above his head, forming the phrase, "Forever breathing in our hearts." Similar wings follow him to Dallas, where his image expands across the boarded windows of the Dallas Chop House. A painted banner remains blank for viewers to decide the message for themselves. At a time when the video of Floyd's death has been so heavily circulated, we see not the reflection of a police officer's knee on his neck, but the reflection of the strength in his face. We choose to remember Floyd in life rather than death. These pieces memorialize the life of a man whose time on earth was cut too short. His face has become a symbol of the injustices of the world, a reminder that we are still a long way from the America we've dreamed of. And the art goes further than the image of Floyd's face. His power has manifested itself in messages of empowerment that line the boarded windows of shops in Dallas. Images of unity and calls for justice stand prominently as members of the Dallas Army of Artists continue to work with local businesses to cover the wooden planks that line their stores in precaution of damage and break-ins amid unrest. Art has long been a part of struggles against inequity and oppression. It's a powerful and universal language that transcends all barriers and informs people from all walks of life. It humanizes the struggle and connects with people emotionally in a way that organized protest cannot replicate. Even small endeavors go a long way in injecting meaning that cannot be formulated by speeches or explanations. Take Dallas's giant eyeball structure, which sits outside the Jewel, a 5-star hotel. Now You See Us was spray-painted at the bottom of the piece along with Floyd's initials and last words, I can't breathe. You don't need to support the spray-painting of private or public property to understand that this was a powerful statement. It made visible the frustration exacerbated by injustice that can no longer be ignored. As a result, eye has made its way into other murals across the city as signifying the change that is coming. More importantly, however, art never lets us forget. As we walk the streets we call home, these new images serve as a reminder that there is still work to be done. They sit beside the murals that went up after Michael Brown was killed by police in 2014, beside the vibrant paintings of figures from past civil rights movements, besides the images that tell the long tale of Texas history. Art stands the passage of time. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This column is entitled Comparing Trump-Biden Agendas by Hugh Hewitt, Washington Post. The best commentators on the presidential race, who are also partisans, and that includes about 99% of all reporters, hosts, analysts, in my view, should nonetheless be able to fairly articulate the motivations of each coalition backing either President Donald Trump or former Vice President Joe Biden. I will be voting for Trump. He believes in the Constitution, as proved most obviously by his 2 Supreme Court justices and 53 Federal Circuit Court judges. Trump will continue his military buildup, especially his expansion of the Navy, where he aims to reach 355 ships. Trump has confronted the Chinese Communist Party on its numerous crimes in a way no president has since the bilateral thaw began by Mao Zedong and President Richard Nixon in 1972, and yet he is willing to deal with its hardline leadership short of war. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo almost daily articulates and advances Trump's understanding of the new Cold War with China we find ourselves in. If there is any doubt about that, consider a recent speech by Robert O'Brien, in which the president's national security advisor declared, "The Chinese Communist Party is a Marxist-Leninist organization. The party general secretary, Xi Jinping, sees himself as Joseph Stalin's successor." Attorney General William Barr is a deeply intelligent, experienced, and relentless force for the rule of law. Trump supporters hope he oversees the rapid conclusion of U.S. Attorney John Durham's investigation into the interference with the peaceful transition of power after Trump's surprise 2016 win, and a cleansing from government of those who refuse to honor the people's votes. Trump has pushed through a massive deregulation of the American economy, and his supporters want more of this shrinking of federal control. Support for Biden rests on many pillars. He is generally pleasant and amiable, a calm and welcoming presence. Many of his supporters simply yearn for an era of domestic goodwill, of reborn civility, and believe Biden will be gracious and kind to all. Biden's supporters want taxes raised significantly to build infrastructure and to raise up long underserved Americans. Biden will defend and expand President Barack Obama's signature legislative achievement in health care. Biden's judges will be the opposite of Trump's, ready to leave the job of umpiring and eager to participate in a long overdue injection of their understandings of equality into American institutions. Biden judges will almost certainly see nothing wrong with the return of race-based rewards or in limiting newly invigorated free exercise clause. The return of goals and timetables, if not explicit quotas, will likely be assured. Reparations will not just be on the table, they may wind up in law. Teacher unions expect a massive infusion of federal funding, and public employee unions generally expect the same for their beleaguered state-administered pension funds. Though Biden has said he is against it, his supporters may expect him to sign any bill that increases the number of Supreme Court justices in a successful replay of Franklin Roosevelt's failed 1937 plan to pack the court. Indeed, most of Biden's supporters will want a new millennium version of FDR, relentlessly experimenting with new agencies and programs, changing everything, often in the name of social justice. His appointees will be from the left and the far left. This lurch to the left will be a feature, not a bug, as the Democratic coalition has moved well to the left of Bill Clinton's or Obama's supporters. A Green New Deal will be law, and the United States will rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, and the Europeans committed to reviving the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or Iran deal. Trump's proposed peace plan for Israel and the Palestinian Authority will be withdrawn. Biden supporters hope he will use soft power to coach the People's Republic of China into renewed, amicable relations with the West. They expect from Biden a return to national security administered as it had been until Trump by the standing, though informal, Central Committee of Foreign Policy grandees of New York and Washington. Amnesty for people in the country without permission will be a first 100 days goal for some, and the hated border wall will likely be defunded or stopped. A Democratic Congress could impose universal voting by mail on the states in the name of ending voter suppression. That's a fair statement of the expectations of both coalitions on this weekend celebrating our shared freedoms. They should begin debating their visions across a stage facilitated by fair moderators soon.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 7th, 2020, etc. Breadwinner gives good health, short shrift. Dear Abby, I have a wonderful husband of almost 20 years and two teenage children. My husband is incredibly hardworking in his stressful career and has provided a very comfortable life for us. The trouble is, he puts work ahead of any self-care. He works most waking hours, doesn't eat well, exercises rarely, is overweight. The list goes on. When I ask, encourage, nag him to make positive lifestyle choices, he reminds me of the life insurance he has and turns it around on me and says I am stressing him. Abby, I love my husband, and I worry that this will cut his life and our life together short. Can you help? Beside myself with worry. Dear beside yourself, I wish I could wave a magic wand and make your husband receptive to what you are trying to do for him. But until he's ready to address these issues and do something about them, nothing will change. If he enjoys his career and takes pride in the fact that you and the children are and will be provided for, then he's living the life he has chosen for himself. This does not mean you must give up entirely suggesting healthy lifestyle choices, but perhaps do it a little less often and in terms of activities he might enjoy. Dear Abby, after a long and successful life, my uncle recently passed away. His wife is my mother's sister. During one of our phone calls, she told me she and my cousins had written his obituary and that it would be published soon. To my shock and dismay, I located the obituary and discovered that my sister and I were not mentioned as his niece and nephew. I am still terribly hurt. Why would they do this? My sister and I grew up spending every major holiday and birthday with my uncle. The obituary did include his other niece and nephew, who live on the opposite side of the country and kept in touch only with an occasional phone call and holiday card. I included my cousins in my parents' and sisters' obituaries, all of whom have passed in the last few years. I feel that I must address this with them, but I don't want to add to the pain they are going through while they mourn their loss. I now dread attending the memorial because I'm worried friends of our family may bring it up, and I won't know what to say. Hurt nephew in Illinois. Dear nephew, even when a death is expected, many people go into a state of shock, which interferes with their ability to sequence facts. It is entirely possible that the obituary was written when your aunt and cousins weren't thinking straight, which is why you were omitted. If someone If someone brings it up at the memorial, which I doubt will happen, rather than nurse hurt feelings, I hope you will point out that the family, including you, is grieving, period. Dear Abby, how do you politely ask a neighbor to mow his lawn at reasonable times of the day? Mine seems to be doing it 3 days a week, and always when we want to enjoy our backyard. Trying to relax. Dear Trying, if you are on speaking terms with this neighbor, explain that the noise from his lawnmower interferes with your ability to enjoy your backyard, and ask, politely, if he could schedule it at another hour of the day. If he is a good neighbor, he should be willing to accommodate you. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com. Sodium reduction in water. Dear Dr. Roach, our tap water at home has high sodium levels. A letter from the city says it contains sodium at concentrations of 85.8 milligrams per liter. While we do not drink the water often, we do use ice made from this water. My cardiologist has asked that I lower sodium in any way I can. I have mitral and aortic stenosis. I had chemotherapy and radiation in 1985-86 for Hodgkin's disease. My research has not shown a way to treat the water to reduce the sodium, and buying water is expensive as well as cumbersome to have to store. TF. Answer. Reduction of sodium is an appropriate goal for most North Americans. However, drinking water is not usually a significant source of sodium. It seldom accounts for more than 5% of a person's sodium intake. In some parts of the country, water naturally has more sodium, or it can be introduced into the water supply, such as by salting roads, or it can be added through water softeners. Even if you don't drink much, you are probably cooking with it as well. There are few times when the amount of sodium in drinking water makes a significant difference in a person's medical condition. This may be one of those cases. If you don't want to use bottled water, the best solution is probably a reverse osmosis system, which can be installed under your sink. It can remove more than 90% of sodium and is cheaper in the long run over bottles. I'd recommend finding a plumber experienced in installing these. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Jacqueline Bigger's Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Cancer and a moon in Aquarius. Happy birthday for Tuesday, July 7, 2020. Creative and truthful, you are gifted with revelations you want to share with others. Your career is a driving force this year, and you must remain true to your vision. If single, you are so fanciful and attractive that many are drawn to you, but you can be picky. If attached, you need complete understanding from your partner, and then you are in bliss. Virgo thinks you're difficult to live with. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Today is significant regarding relationships and future plans. If you host an event, it will be a spectacular success. Your popularity and charm are in top form. Intellectual curiosity is heightened. It is also a good time to visit a book club. Tonight, up late. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Do your own research connected to career goals. Organize your priorities. Make lists to guide you through the days to come. A sense of camaraderie builds, and you are truly thankful for your coworkers and for your friends. Tonight, many exciting plans for the future. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Much is expected of you. Identify your priorities and get enough rest. Drawing up a list of future plans is very beneficial for you. Your plans promise greater freedom and positive change, especially regarding long-range goals. Tonight, cultivate new connections and friends. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. There can be an interest in near-death experiences, reincarnation, or communication with one passed on. A sudden and radical shift in your long-held perception about these matters is likely today. A friend's enthusiasm encourages you to be more adventurous. Tonight, new challenges become attractive. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Long-time friendships and old loves generate a comforting warmth today. Aspects create a stabilizing support system for you. The good people in your life bring special blessings. It's a pattern that has made the past 2 years something of a reality check. Tonight, date night. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. Keep working and be conscientious. The rewards are just around the corner. A serious state of mind prevails. You are juggling trying to balance your domestic and professional responsibilities. Today marks a new cycle in your work. Tonight, get a good, restful night's sleep. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Today stirs fire into your romantic prospects. A magnetic attraction develops. But the relationship might not stabilize until some weeks have passed. Try the pink bubble technique if in doubt. Tonight, imagine a pink light expanding from your heart to engulf the one you love. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. A new and deeper understanding of what love is all about develops. Today will open avenues of expression you have always secretly known were possible, but never actually manifested before. There is a sense of mission and purpose coming. Tonight, you are excited. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 2 stars. Keep a sense of humor if a neighbor is difficult or eccentric. Remember, the world would be very dull if we were all the same. Transportation arrangements will have to be revamped. Say an incantation to the gods of roadways. Tonight, play a little. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Check provisions and supplies. Restock shelves and larders. Use that bit of extra cash you have been hoarding to make a purchase that will give you pleasure. Think about employing prosperity consciousness rather than fearing scarcity. Tonight, the siege is over. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Today is a good time for visits. Express creative ideas, attend cultural events, and nurture relationships. Whatever you focus on will grow now, so take care of what means the most to you. Tonight, be careful what you wish for. Your power is strong. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. A lost love or abandoned hobby could suddenly assume new importance. You are highly imaginative and creative today. Record ideas and thoughts that occur now for future reference. A visit to a formal garden or park refreshes. Tonight, use visualization to find inner bliss. Born today, director George Cukor, 1899, musician Ringo Starr, 1940, actress Shelley Duvall, 1949.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.